Hello there. Thank you so much for joining us for Market Sense today. I'm Heather Hedges with Fidelity. So we've had a busy week of economic news to talk about today. The equity rally of late has shown few signs of slowing down. Stocks just had their best week of the year. And the Fed is projecting economic growth will potentially come in even stronger than previously anticipated. But inflation is still sticky. So because of that, the Fed made the decision not to cut rates last week. Investors are still anticipating, though, that those cuts may be coming as soon as June. And in fact, last week, the Fed did give some signals that three rate cuts could still be on the table this year. So even though the exact timing and magnitude of these rate cuts is still unclear right now, you know, many investors may be looking ahead to try to position their portfolios for an environment of falling rates. And to talk about what this means for investors now and the opportunities that investors could see when these rates eventually do fall is Denise Chisholm, and she is Fidelity's Director of Quantitative Market Strategy. Her research focuses on analyzing market history to uncover patterns and probabilities that can help inform the current outlook. We're also excited today to be joined by Ashley Tran from Florida. She is a Florida-based branch leader here at Fidelity, and she's here to talk about what she and her team are hearing from their clients and some of the questions they are getting. So, ladies, we've got an all-female power panel today, which I'm so excited about because it is Women's History Month, so very appropriate. You know, Denise and Ashley are both leaders in their field. They're also two of my favorite people here at Fidelity. So I'm just so thrilled that you both made the time. Thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Really excited for the conversation today.
Yeah, it's great to be back, Heather.
Oh, it's so great to see you both. And I would like to just quickly remind viewers, if you would like to find out what's on Denise and Ashley's minds, you can type in questions for them in the comment section right under the video that you're watching here, under the video player on LinkedIn or on YouTube or on our website if you're watching through our website live. We do read all of your comments and questions, so thank you so much for them. And with that, today is Tuesday, March 26th. Denise, what a treat to get your take today on the economic headlines. So again, as I said at the top of the show, the Fed's most recent projection shows that it's still signaling probably three rate cuts this year by the end of the year. Does planning for three cuts to you feel realistic given how sticky inflation has been?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you bring up the concept of stickiness because the sticky part really depends on what data you look at. So the core CPI, right, the consumer price index, which is usually the first inflationary indicator we get in any given month, the core ex food and energy, if you also take out the shelter component on a year
housing.
On year,
housing by shelter, yep.
The housing component, right, which is 40% of that. But everything else other than that on a year-on-year basis for the last 7 months is just a hair above 2%. So that's a mathematical illustration of the fact that, look, most of the consumer price index is actually bumping around the Fed's target. And even with that housing component or that shelter component, which usually lags and catches up to the deceleration in rent prices, but even with it on a 6-month run rate basis, we're around 2%. We just haven't been there on a full year basis. Mm-hmm. And what's really predictive is not just what inflation is in terms of what the Fed will or won't do, but that in conjunction with how high they have raised rates already. So when you're in the situation historically where inflation is low, and by low, I mean the bottom quartile, and nominal rates or the Fed funds rate, where they hold their policy rate, is in the top quartile, and we're at 5.5, 70% of the time in history, they do in fact cut over the next year. And even if they don't, what you find is because the Fed only controls overnight rates, and everybody who buys and sells longer term treasuries like the 5-year or the 10-year, the market essentially controls those longer end rates. What you find is even when the Fed doesn't cut rates in that environment, the long end tends to come down, meaning that we have likely seen the peak in interest rates, regardless of what the Federal Reserve does.
Okay. So even if the Fed funds rate is not cut, the market has its own way of correcting things.
Correct.
All right, let's get into our discussion, which it leads us nicely into this discussion about the opportunities that investors could see once those rates start coming down for a variety of reasons. First of all, Denise, can you talk about why, after 2 years of rising interest rates, the Fed may cut? Because, you know, some investors have pointed out rate cuts may not be such a great thing if those rate cuts are happening in response to a recession. So how much does the reason behind that eventual cut matter?
No, it matters a lot. In fact, that's exactly the right question. So it's funny because I get a lot of questions from investors like, what's the pattern around a rate cut? And they're all very different. What's key is exactly what you said. The why matters most. If the Fed is cutting in response to growth weakening substantially, meaning that you are about to go into a recession, that tends to be not a great thing for the equity market. But if the Fed can lower rates to recalibrate policy, because maybe that rate was just a little too high relative to where inflation is, then that has been a very positive situation for the market. Now, we used to call this a mid-cycle slowdown or a mid-cycle soft landing. We haven't seen anything really like that since the mid-90s, but we saw it in the mid-90s, we saw it in the mid-80s, we saw it in the mid-70s, and we saw it in the mid-60s. We forget that we haven't seen something like that recalibration in quite some time. But there is a way to analyze that from a data perspective, which is really what I really like to do. So if interest rates are coming down, the playbook is different relative to whether earnings growth is accelerating, getting better, or whether earnings growth is getting worse. When earnings growth is getting worse and interest rates are going up, that tends to be the worst case combination for the market. That's essentially where we have been over the course of the last 12 to 24 months. Where we are likely emerging to is, again, we talked about my base case being that we have likely seen rates peak and they actually on the short end of the curve may fall at the same time that earnings growth is accelerating. That has actually been a sweet spot for equity market returns historically.
Okay. All right. That's encouraging, Denise. Ashley, let's bring you in here now because you work with customers all the time and those customers may be telling you that they're concerned about what's happening in the markets, or they may be telling you they're excited at the prospect of rates coming down and the stock market rallying, or maybe they're trying to buy a home and they're excited about rates coming down for that reason. So anything you would add here?
Yeah, definitely. I think we hear a little bit of everything. And just a reminder that it's reasonable to be concerned with the unknown. But like Denise said, while past performance is never an indicator of future performance, if you take a look historically, falling rates have been a positive for the stock market broadly on average. And that's regardless of whether the economy is in a recession or not. And this market rally, particularly if it continues, it's been such a good reminder of why it's important not to try and time the market. I like to say it's about time in, not timing the market. I think a lot of investors have felt very pessimistic and worried about the economy and the market in the past 2 years. And yet, despite all of those fears and worries, we still haven't seen the much feared recession, and now stocks are breaking new record highs, like we mentioned earlier. So investors should just remember that even if they feel like they have a gut feeling about where stocks or the markets may go, what's the most important thing is to have and develop a plan for your investments and to stick with that plan. So first step, I think it's really important to think through the goals for your money and your different accounts and think through with all those accounts, what are my short-term and long-term investments, because there may be opportunity to rebalance across the different sectors or utilize cash in different vehicles.
Okay, really good reminders there. And it's about time in and not timing the market. Let's get back to you, Denise, because you touched on corporate earnings just now. So I know that falling interest rates often go hand in hand with rising earnings. And you think that we are shifting now to an environment of accelerating earnings. Can you talk more about what's leading you to think that and what that might mean for investors?
Yeah, sure. There are a lot of patterns to recognize in the historical data. And as much as we didn't have an official NBER recession, the National Bureau of Economic Research, that declares recessions based on the fact that we didn't have any job loss, we did, in fact, see a contraction in corporate earnings. So corporate earnings did fall on a year-on-year basis. They didn't fall as much as we saw in the pandemic. They didn't fall as much as we saw in the financial crisis, but it was within the bounds of a normal recessionary fall. And the reason for that was, conceptually, the goods got a lot more expensive and labor costs got a lot more expensive. And you can measure all those things empirically in historical data. So we saw unit labor costs, right? So the cost of labor per unit of output go up as much as we ever saw since the 80s. So that was what rung the bell in terms of it's different this time, weighing on corporate profits. But that data has now turned around quite substantially. So unit labor costs have massively decelerated at the same time that goods costs, you can measure this with the producer price index, relative to overall costs that we just talked about with the consumer price index or the CPI, that differential has shown increasing positive trends in terms of the potential for profitability in the future. So what you find is that cost push shock that corporate America saw in 2022-2023 is now playing out in exactly reverse, where goods are falling faster than pricing and unit labor costs are coming down substantially, which leads you to the increasing probability that not only the earnings recovery that we have seen, the nascent earnings recovery that we have seen over the last 6 months, is going to continue to accelerate, but it's likely to be durable into 2025.
Okay. And another thing that we get a lot of questions about here on Market Sense, Denise, is about AI. You know, it's a common theme that we've been talking about for a while now, and whether this tech boom will likely continue. I know that Urian's talked a lot on Market Sense here about large cap stocks being sort of the generals and small caps being the soldiers, and where the generals go, the soldiers will follow, is something that Urian likes to say. So I'm curious to get your perspective on whether you think the trend of large cap stocks leading the market will continue once interest rates start coming down.
Right. And I'm sure Urian has talked about this. The market on an absolute basis is definitely broadening out, meaning it's not just large caps going up. Smaller caps and mid caps are joining the party in terms of absolute return. I think the question is, which now is set up for the best return over the next 12 to 24 months? So that's what I consider when I evaluate the data. And we have seen small and mid caps lag substantially by about 15 percentage points over the last year. When I look at the data, I look at what I call relative valuation support, which is just to say that small caps are very cheap relative to large caps when you measure valuation on either earnings or their profitability, or when you look at their book value, which is sort of a measure of their assets. When I look at that over a time series, we have the data going back to 1962, what you will find in the data is the cheaper small and mid-cap stocks are, the more likely they are to outperform big-cap stocks over the course of the next year. Now, it's not 100% guarantee, but the cheaper they get mathematically, the more interested I am. And this is happening at the exact same time that we have that potential catalyst of the first Fed rate cut of the cycle. And what you see historically with data going back to the 60s is that that has increased your odds of small caps outperforming large caps, and substantially so if interest rates are in fact coming down. So we do have a trifecta of signals that say that the risk reward down the cap spectrum is quite favorable relative to large caps.
And just to make sure I understand this right, the reason that falling rates might provide a greater boost to small cap companies is because small cap companies generally carry more debt than larger companies. Is that right? So
they exactly
felt the pinch of higher rates more, but then they could benefit from this relief?
Yes, at the same point at which it is likely some of the bad news is priced in as well.
Okay. All right. So also falling interest rates and rising interest rates historically have benefited cyclical sectors. And I know, you know, when I think of you, Denise, I think about cyclical sectors. So let's talk about which sectors you think might see some growth once interest rates do start falling.
Yeah, you should think of me when you talk about cyclical sectors, because that really is the differentiated playbook. When you think about interest rates coming down and earnings growth accelerating, which again is my base case, what sectors offer the best risk reward is consumer discretionary, technology, real estate, and financials historically. Now, we've seen the dominant outperformance in technology, right? And away from those much more defensive areas like consumer staples, utilities, and to a lesser extent, healthcare. And consumer discretionary has been not keeping up as well with technology, but the areas of the market that I'm really interested in right now are financials and real estate. And those are, in some ways, the areas of the market that have more issues. But the question for me is how much of that bad news is potentially priced in. And when I look at the financial sector, it's very rare that you actually get a median PE, so price to earnings ratio, a measure of what you're paying for what profit the actual sector generates. When you look at the history back to the 1960s, it's very rare that you get a median sector to be below 10 times. That's actually where we are on financials. And the cheaper they have been on an absolute basis historically, again, the more likely they have been to outperform. And real estate screens very similar to me in terms of that support. And they also have the situation where we know, like real estate, yes, there are empty office buildings, but the real estate sector from a GICS perspective and from an investment exposure perspective perspective encompasses so many more things than office. So the question is there some value there? And what you are seeing now is, despite the fact that fundamentals are poor, you see this odd, very interesting historical correlation. The worse fundamentals are, meaning earnings growth or return on capital, the worse they have been historically, the more likely it is that the stocks have priced it in and actually outperform. So you're starting to see a confluence of signals that are saying maybe that market broadening effect outside of technology does come from interest rate sensitives from a diversification perspective.
Okay, so just to recap again, it was consumer discretionary, technology, real estate, financials. And it is interesting that real estate, as you said, can outperform still despite, as you said, the empty office buildings that so much has been written about because of the, you know, hybrid and the work from home movement. All right. So I know a lot of people will be happy to hear that, you know, especially with real estate, maybe the worst is over. But I'd love to bring you back in, Ashley, here to hear more about what clients are saying, too. So let's say you have a client who's been listening to what Denise just laid out for us, her historical perspective, and they've been taking notes on what she's saying might be doing well as interest rates fall. Walk me through how that conversation goes, Ashley, when interest rates start going down and your customer walks into your branch and wants to make some changes.
Yeah, well, interest rates have been a big topic. And if you think about it, they affect nearly all the decisions that you make with your money. Some of those being obvious. I mean, if you think about it, how much more would you stick in a savings account if it paid 5% interest instead of 0.5% interest, and then vice versa? How much less money would you put into stocks or your 401k if you could get 5% in a simple bank account? But the challenge with moving around assets from being invested to something like a high-paying money market is timing risk. So like I mentioned earlier, rate cuts, it can be a catalyst for rising markets. And it's important that your strategy is not just to time the market, because then you could miss the upside opportunity. And that's something that you may not be able to make up. So once interest rates start coming down, it'll be a good time to review your financial plan and determine if any adjustments are needed. So the what we typically do with customers is we have them build a plan around giving each one of their dollars a role. And those roles are emergency, protection, and growth. So keeping some emergency money liquid and accessible, and then protecting what's important to you, whether it's principal, your income stream, saving for legacy, taxes, making sure that you have a protection strategy there. And then, of course, growth. Are we taking advantage of participating in the market? Do we have some money exposed for growth there? So if you're considering adjustments to your financial plan, like I mentioned earlier, start with considering your goals, your time horizon, and the level of risk tolerance that you're willing to assume. And you may not have to actually make any dramatic changes, but you may want to explore opportunities to better position and optimize your portfolio, updating your estate plan and considering your approach to taxes during these times.
Speaking of opportunities, you've sort of alluded to this. We've talked a lot on Market Sense about the estimated $6 trillion parked on the sidelines right now, sitting in cash with rates being as high as they've been. But, you know, as interest rates come down, what might be some of the other options to consider to do with some of that cash?
Sure. And don't get me wrong, cash can play a very important role in your financial plan, but holding a significant amount of cash can actually be a drawback to you over the long term, especially when you think of things like inflation. So if you have significant cash holdings, it may be beneficial to move some of those dollars incrementally into things like certificates of deposits or CDs, as they're more commonly known. There are things like US Treasuries, other types of bonds, and other types of securities that might give you or might offer a more attractive yield for those dollars. And there are certain cash equivalent investments that you can choose, and they won't necessarily have the liquidity of a checking or a savings account, but other options may offer a higher rate of return or yield that will help mitigate some of that lost purchase power owed to inflation that we experience. So falling interest rates, it may mean opportunities in bonds, bond mutual funds, and bond ETFs, because remember, bond prices and bond yields, they have that inverse relationship. They move in opposite directions. And when interest rates are moving down, so do yields. So that means that lower rates are likely to reward investors with rising bond prices.
Okay. some great options to consider there and good to keep in mind, Ashley. Thank you. Denise, I'll let you wrap the conversation today. We always like to end the show by talking about what we are watching. So why don't you talk a little bit about what you're watching, not just for next week, but just in general for this spring in the markets?
Yeah, I think the interesting moves in the market to date have been around gold and Bitcoin. And I've had a lot of investors ask me, what do those moves mean? And what you can tie it back to historically, both of them really, is that there is a historic relationship between big moves in gold and big moves in Bitcoin. We don't have a lot of data on Bitcoin. And the odds are higher that interest rates have peaked, meaning that higher gold and higher Bitcoin likely means the market is predicting lower rates.
Okay. All right. We will leave it at that. Great way to end it, Denise. Great job to both of you for this really timely discussion. So before we go, we did want to brag a little bit about Denise because Denise was just featured in Fidelity's brand new video podcast called Money Unscripted. And the second episode is all about talking to teens about money and finances. And it features Denise and her adorable teenage daughters, which it fits right in with our Women's History Month theme today because Denise in this episode is talking to her daughters about how to save. So let's take a look at a quick clip.
Did you just say that two teenage girls don't care about money?
Well, they care about money. They care about spending my money. I want them to care about their own money.
Clothes, makeup, food. I spend more than I make frequently.
Help them name what they want in the future, right? Do I want a car? Do I want to go to college? And a lot of times it does help to name it on an account.
So that's you, Denise, talking with our Money Unscripted host, Allie Donnelly, about ways to start getting your daughters to be more responsible with their own money and not your money, right?
Yep. It was personal finance 101, 5 lessons during summer, 1 hour, no homework.
Yeah. Can't wait to watch that.
I love that there was no homework involved. That
yeah, they
definitely
like that
sounds
too.
I bet it sounds like a much less painful summer school.
Yes.
I can't wait to watch more of those Money Unscripted episodes, and you can get them wherever you get your videos or podcasts. And as always, if you have any questions about making a financial plan or staying on track, reach out to Fidelity. Fidelity can help. You can call us, you can go online to our website, or you can download Fidelity's app to learn more. Just a reminder, we are also a podcast. Speaking of podcasts, you can search Market Sense in your Spotify app store or Apple Podcasts. Also, if you missed any part of the discussion, you can watch the replay of this as well. If you want to go back and take more notes on what Denise was saying, just go to youtube.com/Fidelity and you can search Market Sense there or on fidelity.com. So on behalf of Denise and Ashley and during Women's History Month, a big thank you to our all-female panel today. I'm Heather Hedges. We will see you back here next week. Remember, we are on every Tuesday at 2 Eastern.
Fidelity does not provide legal or tax advice. The information herein is general and educational in nature and should not be considered legal or tax advice. Tax laws and regulations are complex and subject to change, which can materially impact investment results. Fidelity cannot guarantee the information herein is accurate, complete, or timely. Fidelity makes no warranty with regard to such information or results obtained by its use and disclaims any liability arising out of your use of or any tax position taken in reliance on such information. Consult an attorney or tax professional regarding your specific situation. Information presented herein is for discussion and illustrative purposes only and is not a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Views expressed are as of the date indicated based on the information available at that time and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the Fidelity speaker and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC. To the extent any investment information in this material is deemed to be a recommendation, it is not meant to be impartial investment advice or advice in a fiduciary capacity and is not intended to be used as a primary basis for you or your client's investment decisions. Fidelity and its representatives may have a conflict of interest in the products or services mentioned in this material because they have a financial interest in them and receive compensation directly or indirectly in connection with the management, distribution, or servicing of these products or services, including Fidelity funds, certain third-party funds and products, and certain investment services. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Past performance is no guarantee of future results.
Treasury securities typically pay less interest than other securities in exchange for lower default and credit risk. Investments in smaller companies may involve greater risks than those in larger, more well-known companies. Because of their narrow focus, sector funds tend to be more volatile than funds that diversify across many sectors and companies. Changes in real estate value or economic conditions can have a positive or negative effect on issuers in the real estate industry. The gold industry can be significantly affected by international monetary and political developments, such as currency devaluations or revaluations, central bank movements, economic and social conditions within a country, trade imbalances, or trade or currency restrictions between countries. Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Foreign markets can be more volatile than U.S. markets due to the increased risks of adverse issuer, political, market, or economic developments, all of which are magnified in emerging markets. These risks are particularly significant for investments that focus on a single country or region. Diversification and or asset allocation do not ensure profit or protect against loss. Stock markets are volatile and can fluctuate significantly in response to company, industry, political, regulatory, market, or economic developments. Investing in stocks involves risks, including loss of principal. Fixed income investments entail interest rate risk. As interest rates rise, bond prices usually fall. The risk of issuer or counterparty default, issuer credit risk, and inflation risk. Foreign securities are subject to interest rate, currency exchange rate, economic and political risks, all of which are magnified in emerging markets. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Fidelity Wealth Services provides non-discretionary financial planning and discretionary investment management through one or more portfolio advisory services accounts for a fee. Advisory services offered by Fidelity Personal and Workplace Advisors LLC, FPWA, a registered investment advisor. Discretionary portfolio management services provided by Strategic Advisors LLC, Strategic Advisors, a registered investment advisor. Brokerage services provided by Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, FSB, and custodial and related services provided by National Financial Services LLC, NFS. Each a member NYSE and SIPC. FPWA, FBS, and NFS are Fidelity Investments companies. This information is intended to be educational and is not tailored to the investment needs of any specific investor. Personal and workplace investment products are provided by Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, member NYSE, SIPC, 900 Salem Street, Smithfield, Rhode Island, 02917.